Blog Talk Radio.
I move on and seize, I just conquer and solve another rapper with ease. Cause I'm at my apex, another bar below, nothing but a milliliter. I'm a kilo, second to none, making MCs run, so don't try to step to me, cause I ain't the one. I believe rappers just like Tylenol, and they know it, so I don't see why you all try to front, perpetrating a stunt, when you know that I smoke you up like a blunt. I'm genuine like Gucci, raw like sushi, this age of rage is what rap did to me, to make me want to create chaos and mayhem, cold rock a party. Until the AM, I'll make a muscle, grab the mic and hustle. While you stand dazed and amazed, I'll bust a little rhyme with authority, superiority, and captivate the whole crowd's majority. The rhymes I use definitely amuse, better than Dynasty or Hill Street Blues. I'm sure to score and door for more without a floor, cause I get raw. Lifetime, believe I've never been beaten or eaten and just taken out. You know, come to think about it, I keep them things looking out and real nervous when I'm at your service. But give me that title, boy, you don't deserve it. I work like a slave to become a master. And when I say a rhyme, you know that it has to be perfectly fitted, cause I'm committed. The entertainer and trainer and Kane are getting with it. I go and flow and grow to let you know I damage you. I'm not an amateur, but a professional, a questioner without doubt, superb. So full of action, my name should be a verb. My voice will float on every note when I clear my throat. That's all she wrote. The minute that the cane starts to go on, believe it's gonna be smooth sailing, so on. As I put other rappers out of their misery, get them in a battle and make them all history. Ruling and schooling, and sees that I'm dueling. Watch them all take a fall as I sit back cooling on my throne with the bronze microphone. God bless the child that can hold his own, cause I can roar.
Ain't it good, good.
Like a villain, the meaning of roar is ready and willing to do whatever is clever, take a loss never, and the rhymes I bust coming off is a must, and I come off hard with rhymes that are odd. I rip the microphone and leave it scarred, never smoking or hitting or taking a sniff, only crushing MCs that be trying to drift. I get strong and titanic, do work like a mechanic, make MCs panic, they all get frantic and skeptic, like a girl on a contraceptive, as I rock, but hey, what you expected? I'll get bored for you just like a warrior, rather like a samurai, and I'll be damned if I ever let a Fisher Price MC hang. The rhyme's a toy, nothing but yin-yang. Do it without it on the microphone. Bring your own casket in tombstone, and I'ma preach your funeral. Tell me who in the world could ever come with more. I get bored.
Sports Radio Podcast. It is I, Puma, along with Ice Water. We're going to be talking about a lot of topics in this 90-minute overtime show. We just wrapped up our first 40 on YouTube. Check out our first 40 on YouTube. It's the Goon Squad with Black Door, Ice Water, and Puma. We talk about a lot of sports. We started it late last year, to put our radio faces on video. And watch it, like, subscribe, give us your feedback on that particular show. Today's show, we're going to be talking about the NFL Rooney Rule, talking about the Last Dance that was wrapped up last weekend. Also, Major League Baseball, we're talking some NCAA basketball, talking about some upcoming fights that are being scheduled and and dealt with. We might also talk about Mike Tyson's return. Harrison and Tomlin. Harrison's former defensive lineman for the Pittsburgh Steelers got into a little bit of hot water last week. So we discussed that earlier. We'll discuss that more in detail now. And also some of the NFL players that have been getting in trouble during the off season and the quarantine and trying to figure out, you know, what's going on with that. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with more sports right here on the Goon Squad Sports Radio Show. Welcome back to the Goon Squad Sports Radio Show. We're going to jump right into the discussion about the Rooney Rule. There's some other NFL news, Ike, but I want to get back to the Rooney Rule. We talked about it earlier. And like I said earlier, I really think that this is another smoke and mirror attempt to put the NFL in a positive light, that they're trying to work out the situation with minorities or people of color getting into the coaching ranks and different positions in the NFL other than playing on the football field. A lot of the rules I think that they've been talking about changing is what, to me, they were supposed to be doing in the first place, the internship, mentoring people, bringing people through the ranks. But to me, I just think that it's something where they're not going to make owners hire people that they don't know, whether or not they're getting them to network and all that other stuff. I kind of liken it to Chicago. And I've been here in Chicago for a long time. And for outsiders trying to get work here in Chicago, it's really hard because Chicago goes by the formula. It's who you know. It's not what you know. It's who you know. And so if you don't know anybody, it's really kind of hard to get into situations where you can get jobs, things of that sort. And so once you do, you realize that you have to kind of get in and then prove yourself because people kind of think that when you get into the job that you got the hookup instead of what you know. So I'm going to let you talk a little bit more about what your thoughts are about the Rooney Rule and what the changes they're trying to make, man.
Yeah, well, I mean, the thing of it is, you mentioned about adding, improving a draft pick if you choose to hire a minority coach and a minority general manager. So you can have maybe a third-round pick can go to maybe a high second round, which I think is actually ludicrous. A lot of people around the country are saying the same thing that Tony Dungy said it perfectly. You should not reward owner or a team for doing the right thing, for increasing opportunities right, like that, minorities. I mean, when you do that, then it almost cheapens the hires. So you think about guys like Eric Bieniemy, Leslie Frazier, Reggie McKenzie, who are thinking about having opportunities to become head coaches. Then they say, well, the only reason why you actually received the job is because of the factor that, and again, you got the hookup. So they wanted to have another high draft pick. That just kind of trashes what we're talking about. Again, I also think, too, that they need to have, like, a fellowship program. They need to have something where there's a tier where somebody can start and work their way up. Then you remove the process of telling people, them people saying they don't have any candidates they thought were worthy or qualified. And instead of picking just their friends, the owners I'm talking about, then you can at least look at it and say, well, damn, he's run through this, he's done this, he has some experience. And in the end, the owner's going to pick who they want to anyway. But the one thing you don't want to do is open the door for them to say that there is no qualified candidates, okay? And then sometimes you say, well, they don't want to hire a minority because they don't have any head coaching experience. It's like, well, how would they ever get any head coaching or any coordinator experience if they don't get an opportunity? And I just think that's kind of crazy. And then we also talked about, too, about there might be a type of prototype candidate that certain owners are looking for. And a lot of times that means that it's coming from the offense because they know that the league now, NFL, is all about scoring, and you have to score points to win. But when you think about it, a lot of the other people are coming from the background of from a defensive background. Or maybe somebody's coming from special teams. I think like the Giants coach came from special teams. So you have to have an open mind. But the whole point of it is they're going to hire who they want to because the commissioner works for the owners. But the point of it is you have to make sure that there's enough capable individuals available for them to do that. And then, again, I think starting from the bottom with a fellowship program and having guys work their way up through the front office so they can become a GM or even coaches, having a smaller assistant coaches or somebody on a lower level, scouts or whatever, so they can work their way up. That's where you start it. And then sooner or later, hopefully, you'll receive more candidates that will have the so-called required experience that they're looking for.
Yeah. I originally said in the first 40 that this came about by way of Johnny Cochran with the lawsuit against the NFL. And I think they put some things in place to make it look like they were doing something about this issue of black coaches representing the NFL. And it's been some years since they implemented this, where they were supposed to do the mentoring, the internship, getting folks involved, meeting owners, going to different meetings, things of that sort. Same things they're saying right now. And I just think it's very interesting that they're bringing this up right now. And maybe it was because of some of the candidates that were up for jobs that didn't get selected or didn't even get interviewed. And so you mentioned in the first 40 about T. Martin, but I look at it this way, bro. You really can't make the owners hire anybody they don't want to hire. And until we have black ownership in the NFL where they can hire folks of color, then it's not going to happen. It's just, to me, maybe trying to avoid another lawsuit. I've seen the Oakland Raiders pull the bait and switch where they said, hey, we're going to interview a bunch of people, but they already knew who they were going to hire. And it was so blatant. And I'm not sure they even got punished for it, to be honest with you, for doing that. It was so blatant that they were probably doing what NFL teams have been doing all along, but theirs were kind of exposed because, to be quite honest, they're not smart enough to really kind of hide anything that they're doing. This is not your Al Davis football team organization ran the way he ran it. You know, it's his son and some other dude that clearly doesn't know what he's doing. But I just see this as if they say, hey, you have to interview X amount of people, it's still going to be the same. They could say, hey, I interviewed these folks and we didn't like them, so we're going with the people that they wanted to hire anyway, people that they know, people that they had been recommended to them. You mentioned earlier about the good old boy system. I don't think that is far-fetched at all. I believe the NFL and some of these major league teams, it is the good old boy system. They purposely keep people of color out of ownership and out of decision-making positions. So I just think it's really interesting why they're doing it now, maybe because of the backlash with the Kaepernick situation, trying to kind of get as far away from that as possible. And trying to get away from some of the articles and some folks mentioning that, you know, there's still not a proportionate representation of the players that play in the league to the folks that are making the decision.
Yeah, and I'm not sure if that ever will be the case. I'm just you know, keeping it real. I don't know if that will ever
right.
Because it's the players who make up 70% of the league, and just part of it is, as you mentioned, the owners decide who they want to hire. And when it comes down to that, all you can do is put things in place, put people in place, and try to give them opportunities. And then they have to deal with that demon or whatever, that they're not doing it. Again, they continue to show you that, look at Kaepernick, and I hate to keep talking about Kaepernick, but they show you how they roll when it comes to their club. If you get out of line, here's what we'll do. If we think we might want to let you in, then we got rules for that too. You have to understand that it goes that way. If they don't want somebody in, or they don't want to, you know, they can top it off in a certain way, or they might just feel like I don't think they feel pressure to hire minorities. They don't.
No, I don't think so either.
No, because it's our league. So what the hell are you talking about? We're considering them, but you can't tell me. They're saying primarily, you can't tell me who the hell I can hire, who I can't. Well, I got four I have to hire. The Rooney Rule, you said,
yeah.
I got to follow it. I followed it. I have so many people in here. I talk to them knowing they don't have a chance in hell of getting a job, but I'm following what you said. So that's the way I see it. And I'm not sure that's going to change anytime soon. You mentioned about ownership. I'm not sure how far that's going to go, because it's the reason why that club is the way it is.
Mm-hmm.
It's the reason for that. Not by mistake. That's orchestrated a certain way for a reason.
Yeah. To me, until black owners or people of color start really taking over, buying teams, maybe new franchises, buying franchises from the good old boy system, I don't see this changing. I just think that it's a strategic move by the NFL, a marketing move to saying, hey, we're trying our best. We've heard your cries, we've heard your concerns, and this is what we're going to do. And it's just more of the same. We're going to put some rules together, and the NFL teams, the owners will go, okay, you put some more hurdles and some hoops that I have to jump through. I'll do that, but I'm still hiring who I want to hire anyway. And if I don't want to hire a black coach, then I'm not hiring a black coach. If I don't want to hire black coordinators, I'm not hiring black coordinators. I will recommend them to other teams, but I'm not going to hire them. You just can't. I mean, it doesn't make sense. If I have a business, you can't tell me, even if you're a governing body, who to hire and who to fire. You just can't do it. It just doesn't make sense. So unless they make some drastic changes to the system, or unless they open up the ownership of, you saw what happened when some of the teams were for sale. It was like they were discarding a lot of different people of color from buying their franchises. And all of a sudden, out of the blue, somebody will step up. Somebody who looks exactly like the ownership that they have, some of the owners they have in the league, will step up and buy it, and it's no questions, no problem. You know, sign, seal, delivered, the deal is done. And then that person is a NFL, he's owner of a franchise in the NFL. And so unless you change the system, unless you make it very equal to where if teams are up for sale and you give a chance of black ownership, I don't see this coming. And even if that happened, I got the feeling that they will go to the back room with that black owner and say, you know what, this is the rule. This is how we roll. So if you're not with us, you're against us, and you won't be here for long if you're against us. If you don't play ball, then you don't play at all. I'll let you have the last word on that, and then we can move to the Aida Smith story being reinstated in the NFL. Ooh.
Yeah, so, I mean, when it comes down to it, like you said, they probably would take them in the back room, because at the end of the day, if there's only one or two owners, you're still a minority. So at the end, when they decide about making votes, that's what they do. So that person still will be working their way up. You know, when you have one single voice and you try to get other people to work with you, sometimes it's hard for that voice to be heard. So I think they got a long way to go, And this is, like you said, just a little window dressing to try to keep things to be seen as if they're making a difference. And I'm not sure if that's the case.
Yeah, the NFL is, man, they're tripped. They're the biggest thing going right now in sports, but they're a trip. They are a trip. And then, what do you think about Aiden Smith being reinstated into the league? Of course, his brother had some drug problems, things of that sort, and now he's reinstated to come back and play football. What do you think about it? Because I'll give you my opinion first. We knew of a player that played in Cleveland, went to New England. And I just see this as a repeat of what that brother went through, and now he's out of the league again. So your thoughts on this, man? Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe you have a different perspective.
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's like anything else. You want to give people additional chances, but I don't know. They must have seen something. But all you can do is try to let him try and see what happens. Maybe he's an exception. Maybe he's not going to do that. Maybe he really sees – he made a difference in his life. But the only way that you're going to find out is unless you give him a chance, right? That's the only way I see that.
Yeah.
So if he messes up, then they will do what they have to do to remove him. But, you know, Dallas has been known for taking chances. New England was known for taking chances. It just depends on how you look at it. And sometimes the chances New England took, a lot of people were a little bit okay with it because it must be okay because New England did it. But that same thing happens in Dallas. It's a sin because the Cowboys are just, you know, and I'm just throwing it out there. Some other teams say the same thing. They look as almost as if they're so desperate to win that they'll try anything. But I don't know. I mean, you got to let him in. You have to let him in, and they did. So they must have think they saw some behavior that was becoming of another chance. So that's it. But if he does not do right, we'll get rid of him. That we know.
Yeah. We're going to take a quick break, but ESPN is showing the Hagler-Leonard fight, and I don't want to have an argument later on in the show about that. I know who I thought won, and I watched this fight. I can't tell you how many times I watched this fight.
Watch it again.
I must have watched this fight 10 times. Huh?
Look, I think you should watch it again on the break. You might miss something.
Yeah, I mean, I watched this. I literally watched this about 10 times. And every time I watched it, it's the same result. And, yeah, we'll talk about it later. Let's talk about The Last Dance after this break. Back to the Goon Squad Sports Radio Podcast. It's Puma and Ice Water. We're going to talk about The Last Dance. And, of course, ESPN aired The Last Dance. They did it a month early or a couple of months early. They were supposed to air it in June, but they blessed us with a documentary that used up some time, in this quarantine. And I suppose it has some high ratings. But there are some things that I thought that were sorely missed from this observation. But I'm going to give it over to you first to give your thoughts about some of the things that you saw and observed in The Last Dance, give your perspective, and then after the dance, some of the reaction to some of the folks that were in the documentary that spoke out recently.
Yeah, well, first of all, I thought it was The Last Dance was a great time filler for a lot of people. It kept you interested unless you were feeling some kind of way. Kind of bulls,
Black Thor.
No, there's a lot of people out there that I like the Bulls. But if you're feeling some kind of way because you're dumb, you know the story, and I get that. But I think for some of the younger generation and other people that just wanted to find more insight about how the Bulls ran the team or and how they interacted with the inner circle, I think it was more than entertaining. And people wanted to hear, a lot of people wanted to hear from Jordan. You had not really heard from him talk about this, so it worked that way. So I think a lot of people like that. It's ironic, though, that what I liked about it was you had a chance to hear some of the players talk about Jordan and how they felt in some kind of way. What I found ironic was it wasn't like everything was smooth sailing either. Because when Scottie Pippen had that injury, and he waited to have surgery, Michael Jordan was hot. He could have done that in the summer. Doing that when I want to, he wanted to get back at Jerry Krause. But it went back and forth, and it was interesting to see. I think you started to see, as crazy as Jordan may seem and over the top as he was, they kind of humanized him a little bit because he went through a lot. And not saying nobody else has not either. But like when his dad passed and when he won the title after his dad was no longer there and he fell on the floor and just wept, kind of stuff like that too. And then the connection that he had with the security guard, actually the guy that really was his bodyguard, if you will. Yeah, things like that. And then it just showed you that he was such a competitor that he wasn't perfect. He was a butthole at times, and he was trying to be the ultimate winner. But, I mean, the biggest thing is that they showed that, you know, that he knew who to pick on. And like I said, I was like earlier, I would have liked to seen the perspective from Ron Harper. Because he played against him, and he played with them, and he continued on to play with Phil Jackson when he moved to the Lakers. So he knows the ins and outs of everything. And he was along for the ride. But you just never really – I think he had – out of all of the people, his perspective would have been quite unique. You could say the same thing about Dennis Rodman, who they got a lot of love to. But, you know, Dennis did not play as long as Harper did. Harper got 5 rings with Phil and that crew. You know, 3 with Jordan and 2 with the Lakers. So he knows that in and out. And for some reason or another, he always found room for Harper. He had to be doing it right, and they knew he was doing it right.
Yeah. One thing that was obvious to me was, you know, Craig Hodges got blackballed from the league for going to the White House and speaking out on social justice issues. And Jordan, who could have helped, did not help and say anything at the particular time. He was blackballed from the league, and he was erased from the Bulls' history. Of his contribution. That was painfully obvious to me. And I was sitting there just waiting for it. I can't even remember seeing any clips where Craig Hodges was in. And I know that had to be something that if they're saying that Jordan okayed this, then it had to be something that Jordan played. Hey, I don't want that guy in the video. I don't want to talk about him, and I don't want that guy in the video, because Craig Hodges was very vocal after it happened. He didn't go away quietly. He was very vocal. So it was interesting that they really kind of highlighted Steve Kerr, and John Paxson's role and how they were contributors to championship, but just totally forgot Craig Hodges. And that just really bothered me. I do think that the presentation was well done. ESPN did a great job of spacing it out and milking it for whatever it's worth. The other thing that I mentioned that bothered me is that, but you know, people will remember history the way they want to remember history. The problem is that there are people who have been watching and observing, close observers of it. And I live here in Chicago, and I was here during the championship run with the Bulls. I'm a Knicks fan, and what I saw in the league was that you had the Bad Boys in Detroit, You had Boston, who was a rough team. You had Lakers, who could play finesse but could out-physical you. And there were jockeying positions. You had the Lakers, Boston Celtics. You had the Detroit Pistons making their run. You had Portland in the mix trying to make their run. You had teams like Utah. But during the time in the East, the Bulls couldn't get over the Detroit Pistons. And they were more of, and I speak of the Bulls, more of a finesse team. But during that time, all you heard in Chicago, all I heard is Phil Jackson complaining about the officiating and being roughed up by the other team, the players being very outspoken about this, and they were. And I think Bill Laimbeer said it during his interview after the first episode, they were whiners. They whined their way into a position where, you know, it almost changed the rules of the league that you could not touch Michael Jordan. And not saying that the Bulls didn't deserve to win their championships. I'm not saying that. I'm not trying to throw dust on it. But I think a pivotal point in NBA history was when the professionals went over to play in the Olympics in Barcelona, Spain. And it was a changing of the guards where Magic and Bird, who came in 1979-80, that really kind of exploded on the league, where David Stern kind of made those two the poster children, for a lack of better terms, of the league. And so he was able to run with that. But those guys were getting old during the time the Bulls were coming on. And so when Michael Jordan was in Barcelona, he became global. And the NBA took advantage of that. They took advantage of that. And you saw, slowly but surely, the rules started to change in the NBA. It wasn't the rock 'em, sock 'em, rough 'em up, you come in the lane, you pay the price kind of basketball. It changed the landscape of the NBA, where fouls back then were just fouls. Today, they are flagrant ones and twos, and you can't get away, and could cost you a suspension. So I know we talked earlier offline about, you know, you're watching the series with Golden State and Cleveland, where Draymond Green was stepped over and, you know, went after LeBron James. And all of a sudden, Draymond Green is suspended for a game, which to me was a pivotal point in changing that series. And Cleveland ended up winning the championship. Back in the day, that would have been, hey, no harm, no foul, no blood. Let's go on and play. This is a championship, all hands on deck. And so to me, I think in 1992, when the Dream Team came to be and Jordan became global, he was the guy that was untouchable. And I'm not downing his abilities. I think he's one of the best players that ever played. But it's definitely changed the league to where we see now, where NBA players, especially the ones that are prominent and are the face of the league or the poster kids of the league, you can't touch them. They get preferential treatment, and it's so obvious now that it's really a joke. And so when we grew up, we were used to, and I know playing, that you coming in lane trying to get an easy shot, it's not going to be easy for you. Now guys can go in and a whistle will blow automatically, and they're barely getting touched. I'm looking at James Harden. I'm looking at different players that you cannot touch because the NBA has a brand with these players, and if they're not playing, people aren't paying. So that's what I noticed. I also noticed that they were trying to – ESPN is trying to put Scottie Pippen – I don't think he deserved to be in the top 50, and he works for that network. And you can argue all you want, and I've argued with people over the years. Scottie Pippen was a sidekick. He had game. But when Jordan wasn't around, Scottie Pippen was ordinary. He could not take teams that he went to that were stacked. And to the championship, he just couldn't do it. He just couldn't do it. So quit trying to sell me that Scottie Pippen is a top 50 player. He's not. He's not. And it made him look bad. Also, Horace Grant, who kind of, you know, Jordan put him under the bus saying, hey, he snitched to this reporter. And Horace Grant firing back. I love that because it's been what I've been saying all along, that different people's perspectives doesn't make it true. Doesn't make it true. And so it really kind of it was refreshing to kind of see Horace Grant firing back, and other, even the owner of the Bulls fired back saying, Michael knows better, in his last remark about we could have kept that team together. He knows better, okay? And so I suspect that, or expect that, we'll have a lot of people kind of firing back. As long as ESPN keeps, you know, just kind of drawing out the story, there are a lot of people going to be chiming in. You already had Isaiah Thomas chiming in, Bill Laimbeer, different people from different teams. Reggie Miller wasn't even going to do this because he's like, hey, I'm still upset on losing our chance to beat the Bulls and put them in retirement, or put Michael Jordan in retirement earlier. And so your perspective on this, because there was a lot of things that I got out of it. Some of the things that I have to admit that I did not know. To me, it was just the Michael Jordan show. So, they marketed it before it came on, like the Last Dance, like it was going to be about the Chicago Bulls, but it was mainly about the Michael Jordan show. Nobody else. It was the Michael Jordan show, and other players were put in as fillers. Your thoughts on this, man?
Yeah, I when they said it, I was like, this is about Jordan, man. You can say the Bulls are a great team.
I was
team,
hoping it wasn't.
I knew it was going to be, because that's why they brought it out the way that they did. And this is the first time that you really get Jordan kind of opened up. He's kind of been low-key, has not really talked about his career, and that's why ESPN was all excited about it. When I heard it, I was like, yeah, it's the Last Dance, but it's going to be focused on Jordan. And, he had some other sprinkled things in about Phil and whatnot. That was kind of cool and how that came to grips. But, and also Jerry Krause was in the big time, because he's the one that was making moves. They made him out to be a villain, but he also was able to put that team together, allowed them to win. So he just didn't go about it the way that they wanted to all the time. But, it was interesting just to see how that worked out. And then you mentioned about Jordan, them not being able to bring everybody back. The other part, too, that I found, I just found out recently, is they said that even if they signed everybody, they wouldn't have been able to back. Because evidently, Jordan cut his finger real bad with a cigar clipper cutter.
Right, I remember that, yeah.
Yeah, really bad. He probably wouldn't have been able to play anyway, not the way he wanted to. So they think that too. But the ironic thing was, they made this big announcement that Phil wasn't coming back. And Jordan mentioned it. But then Reinsdorf was like, well, Phil could have come back. All he had to do was say, yeah. But Phil was like, nah, man. You know, yeah. I don't think Phil wanted to come back. After all the way that they said and treated him, and Reinsdorf, just kind of denounced that he wasn't going to be back. And I don't think, once they won that last one, I don't think he was like, nah. This is a wrap, man. You're not going to just dismiss me. You're not going to treat me in some kind of way. Then all of a sudden you want me to come back. Now I'm good. And he said, in fact, he said he knew it was over. Phil said, yeah, we knew it was over. Plus we called Last Dance. He said, once they said what they said, that Phil would not be back, all of a sudden you want me to come back and make a seventh run. I think Jordan said that because he's a competitor. He wanted to run back and they would have signed contracts, but Phil was like, nah, man, you can't piss on my head, man. Tell me it's raining. Phil had too much integrity. And you look how that all went down, too. What I find ironic is, you remember before when the Lakers were trying to bring Phil back that last time and they didn't sign him? You saw what ended up happening to them? Yeah, so, I mean, I think Phil was like, you know what, I deserve better than this. And even that before he went to the Knicks. But it just goes to show you that I think he was done with it. They had a nice run. And he wasn't going to beg anybody. And 7 would have been cool, but 6 was enough. There was a lot going on. They had a lot of stuff going on. You know, guys like Craig Hodges. What I find ironic is, if you know about the Bulls, they always had, you know, I say it's a puzzle, right? A lot of people don't see it this way, but I'm telling you, they had Jordan, who was the superstar. You had to have a sidekick who was Scottie Pippen. then you had to have a three-headed monster at center, okay? Luke Longley, Bill Winnington, Cartwright, whoever he was, right? Then you had to have a center, somebody that can run it. Then you always had to have a shooter, B.J. Armstrong, Craig Hodges, John Paxson, Steve Kerr. You always had to have a shooter. You had rebounding, and Horace Grant or Dennis Rodman. And then you have fillers after that, guys that can run the point, that could do some other things. But that's what the Bulls were made of. That's how they did it. It was a puzzle. Phil Jackson did the same thing when he went to L.A. He used the same formula with that type of guys, which is why Ron Harper fit right in. But with all that being said, a lot of people didn't understand what they were doing. And there were a lot of teams that probably could have beat them. I still say this, and although it was close, but I don't think Utah had a chance in hell ever beating them. And I think they knew that. I'm just saying. Because what Jordan said, even when the game got close, when they were playing the one game and they're trying to eliminate him when he was sick, he said, Karl Malone always does the same thing. He goes this way, and I'm going to strip him. He's not going to expect me to come behind him. What happens? He strips the ball. I think they knew they could play just well enough to beat them. And I think the other teams were inferior, like Portland. Portland had a great team, but they didn't have a leader at that time with Clyde Drexler and those guys. And right. I don't think Seattle had too much. Seattle just – it was Gary Payton was playing real well, trying to. And Sean Kemp, other than that, they didn't have the mentality to win. You had to have a winner's mentality. And Jordan brought that to the table. And the other part of it, too, is when they played the Lakers. The Lakers were old, man. Old Magic and a young guy sliding defense.
Yeah, they were pretty much done, yeah.
Yeah, they were done. Indiana, beating Indiana was very impressive. But when you look at their, and I'm not to belittle what they've done, but when you look at their whole teams that they beat, and they beat Utah twice, I don't get excited about Utah as one of the greatest teams of ever. He had a 1-2 punch. He had Hornacek, who could play, Byron Russell. But you don't go, oh, man, that damn Utah team from 1999 to 2000 was amazing. You don't say that. Because if Stockton doesn't hit that tray, they don't beat Houston. And he talked about that So they were a very good team, but I wasn't impressed by it. And the Bulls are really being challenged by Utah. And they played some close games, but I think they always knew deep down inside we can get them anytime we want to. A lot of people won't say that. They'll go, oh, no, that's not the case. Okay. If it was the case, how come they didn't step up and win? Anyway, that's just my take on that one.
Yeah, I thought there were two teams that could have took the Bulls out and just didn't get the job done. I remember the series with the Knicks, had them 2-0 going back to Chicago and lost four straight, which to me was one of the worst disasters in NBA history. You figured out how to beat this team, and then you never make the adjustments. You can't win two more games to put Bulls out their misery. And that Indiana team in 98, that Indiana team had them dead to rights and just could not put this Bulls team away. And it was just – and I'm just talking the Eastern Conference, the Eastern Conference Finals. It just mesmerized me. But any Knicks fan, a New York fan, always you to me, I respect Jordan's game and what he did in basketball. Being a North Carolina Tar Heel fan and watching him play there, I'm a Knicks fan, true and true. I follow different teams. Especially different players. Dr. J was my guy, played for the Philadelphia 76ers, loved watching the play. But the Knicks are my team. It was just agonizing watching and knowing as a fan, listen, Jordan is getting the ball. You got to do something. And teams not being able to do it or not executing the way they should have. And, yeah, I thought Indiana was the team in that seventh game that should have put them away, but just couldn't. I think also, Ice, is that sometimes when you get time to reminisce, you think, hey, man, if I could do this, we could have done this one more time. And I think that's what it was, because it seemed like that last year, the Bulls were on fumes. They were on fumes. If they were that team that first got in and played like they played against the Lakers in their first championship. It would have been four straight with Utah both times. But they were on fumes. It takes a lot of wear and tear on your body to play 82-plus games for that long. And so you saw it with Golden State where it's like guys are getting hurt, they're breaking down. It just takes a lot to do. And so I will give them their props. They were able to do it three straight, two separate times and win six championships. But it takes a lot. I walk away from that, the grueling season of the NBA season. But it just gave me a perspective that people remember history how they would like to remember history. And the victors write history. The people who are victorious write the history. And so you can choose to believe it or not. But I was there. I saw it. I don't know any of these folks other than Craig Hodges, but I saw it for myself. And some of the stuff I kind of like, you know, you hear something and your lips kind of go up like, I don't know about that one. That's what I kind of saw in these series. And I watched them very carefully. I'm not a Chicago Bulls fan, but I respect what they did. And the six championships is nothing to sneeze at. But I do realize that the landscape of the NBA changed, and it may have helped them get those championships a little bit easier as opposed to the NBA changing their rules on fouls and what's a flagrant one and two and who gets thrown out. And to me, it kind of helped determine games. Any other NBA story that you want to talk about that you ran across before we get off the NBA?
No, this is going to be interesting to see how they try to come back. It sounds like they're going to do everything they do just to keep this thing together. They're going to try to make it happen soon, as far as letting them go back to training camp and whatnot. And I think they're going to try to finish this season. They're not exactly where they were. Maybe shorten it a little bit, but they're going to try to get the playoffs in and then maybe start back a brand new in December or December of this end of this year. Because I think they really want a championship.
Okay.
I think that they were talking about how much money they'd be losing. And they know that fans want to see this play out. They want to see can LeBron win with Anthony Davis. And because as Black Thor mentioned,
okay,
he may be having a coat going somewhere else. So they want to see this play out this season.
All right, we'll talk some more sports. I'm watching Leonard on his bicycle in the later rounds in this fight. we'll talk some more sports when we come back on the Ghoul Squad Sports Radio Podcast.
The champ is here.
Time's up.
The champ is here.
The remix.
Welcome back to the Ghoul Squad Sports Radio Podcast. What I noticed in this fight also, Ice, they're rebroadcasting this fight, is how Leonard was really kind of playing to the judges, putting his hands up before the 12th round. I remember all this stuff like it was yesterday, just politicking to the judges like he won the fight, he, you know, running around the ring. You and I have different opinions on this fight. I clearly thought Hagler won this fight. But they gave it to Ray because I think because of his showmanship in the ring, his ring generalship, But we can talk about that later. I'll let you fester on that. But anywho, let's talk Major League Baseball. The Oakland A's owe about $1.2 million in back rent. They said they can't pay it due to the coronavirus. What's your thoughts on that, man?
Well, I mean, I'm sure they'll probably come to an agreement at some point. There's a lot going on. They probably say they didn't get a check either. You know, they didn't get the money the Lakers got from the loan. But I think part of it is I think they'll work it out. I do, because the other part, too, you just don't know whether or not baseball is how's that work? Baseball's what are they doing and where they're going to play at. So I think that has a lot to do with what kind of money's being dealt and whatnot, too, because they're trying to figure that out. Are they going to have it in different locations, or are they all going to come together the same way? So a lot of people are trying to figure that out. But they can't pay right now. But I know that they say that certain baseball teams are losing like 75 75 mil a day on certain things.
Wow. 75 what a day? Like 75,000 a day?
Yeah, 75,000 a day each day that they don't play the games, home games.
Wow.
Yeah. I was looking at that, and I was like, wow. So when you see that, that's why they're trying to get it together. So, but the question is whether or not they can – play all the games, or are they going to just kind of figure out somewhere else where they just play only certain places and put them in like a certain kind of league around Robin where you don't have to, you can actually minimize the cost of everything, because they know they're going to lose a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
And then they just kind of ask yourself as to what, if they're going to lose a lot of money, then what happens next? How do they minimize this, and how do they get the guys playing? Because when the fans are not in the building, that's when the teams are going to lose a lot of money. That's the main thing. A lot of people don't see that.
Wow,
that's
a big hit. That's a big hit. Any other Major League Baseball news other than the Korean Baseball League, they're rolling strong. Any other reports that are things that are happening in Major League Baseball?
Well, like you said, it's still just up in the air. That's the main thing. Everybody's like kind of trying to see what's going on, and they're like, whoa, what do we do? But I do think that they're saying to themselves that if baseball says if they can they need to get to training camp, because they can start by July 4th, and they feel like they can get in maybe 82 games. You know, they're going to have they're going to have a lot of conversations. I think they had a certain group on of baseball players talking about what they were going to be doing. They think they're going to have like a 30-man roster and a 20-player taxi squad. So, you know, we have a lot of people coming in. So I think, too, that that's the other thing I wanted to tell you is with the league, they will suffer certain things that if no fans or attendance, then they're trying to get players to see if they would accept a salary reduction despite the 50%
right.
They're going to be getting. So now they're talking about it because they're saying that if no fans are in attendance, that the league can lose roughly $4 billion. No fans in the. Yeah. $4 billion. Yeah. It's a lot of money, man.
Do you think, because I thought about this the other day, of course the games will be televised, but do you think that Major League Baseball, to kind of recoup some of this money where people are out of the area, they would try to booster up the channels that these gain money from, the channels that they're playing these games on, or restrict some games for pay-per-view or some series for pay-per-view to try to recoup some of this money back?
Oh, yeah, they're going to try to get their money back because right now one of the things I wanted to say was the owners are claiming that for each baseball owner would be losing $640,000 per game without fans in the seats. $640,000. So, you know, they said it's kind of out there. They're pushing for the players to agree to take more of a reduction of that 50-50 revenue split. Yeah, they're going to have to try to do something just because of the factor that the games, everything's not going to be free. You're going to have to pay somebody. You're going to pay ESPN. You're going to have to pay something, and maybe that's part of the money that the owners will get back. ESPN having the rights, or whoever has the rights, by charging for it, then part of that goes back to the owners. But, yeah, I think they're going to do everything they can to make sure they find a way to make money off of it, which might mean that if people are watching, then they may up the ante of the advertisers, make more advertisers.
Right.
Advertising might cost more. And then people are watching anyway, people may pay it. But, yeah, the owners are definitely going to try to make their money back. $640,000 per game?
That's a
lot of money.
Wow, that's a lot of money, a lot of money. Man, wow. I can't even say anything to that because you feel bad because the players aren't getting paid. They're not playing. They got families to take care of too. This is a mess. This is a mess. All right, man. Let's get this going. Let's talk about some boxing here at UFC. Before we get to UFC, there was a fight last week we'll get to, and I was wondering if you had a chance to watch it. But let's talk about Danny Garcia, Errol Spence. They're talking about setting up a deal and a date. Your thoughts on that, because you are a boxing expert on this show.
Well, I think it's a great fight, definitely a great fight for Danny Garcia. I think it's a great, what I call a tune-up for Errol Spence, because there's a lot going on. I'm not sure people realize from that car wreck that he had his teeth knocked out. So two of his teeth knocked out. So now
did not know that.
Process, he has temporary like teeth now, and now they're trying to get some permanent teeth for him. And they're trying to say it's going to be okay. But you think about that. He lost his teeth in a wreck, and now he's going to go into boxing, and somebody can hit him in the mouth, and he can lose his teeth. So there's a lot going on. He says healed, he's coming together. But in regards to the fight, I think it's great for Danny Garcia. I think it's a good tune-up for Errol Spence. Of course, everybody's looking forward to him possibly fighting Terrence Crawford, which is great. But on the other end of it, too, is we have to wait and see, because maybe Terrence Crawford is going to have a tune-up fight. And one of the things they're talking about is Terrence Crawford maybe fighting Manny Pacquiao. So that would be interesting. And if not, then of course the fight that I really want to see, I would love to see him fight Sean Porter. But I don't think that's a fight he wants to take. He says they're friends, they don't want to fight. But I think there's a danger with Terrence Crawford to fight Sean Porter before he fights Errol Spence. And if he loses, wants to lose to somebody, Porter, then his opportunity to fight was to fight Spence will really be out the door. So there's a lot going on there. Pacquiao's a player in the game still, some other folks. Keith Thurman, we don't know if he's going to fight anymore, but there's some other players in there too. So I'm excited about that. I'm glad Danny Garcia is getting the shot because he keeps saying that he's ready. But if he shows up and not being first, I think it's going to be the same old thing. You know, what we've seen from Danny Garcia before, because Errol Spence, nothing else, has proven that he's the guy now. I mean, you say what you want to about Bud Crawford, but when you look at his resume, Terrence Crawford, you have to ask yourself, who has he fought? Amir Khan doesn't do it for him. We need for him to be tested. And there's enough talent out there for him to kind of jump in the ring with somebody that's more than decent.
True. You got another fight that they're trying to set up for September, Lomachenko and Lopez. What are your views about this particular fight coming up?
It's like the old and the new. I love it because Lopez is coming out, and he's like, you know what, I'm not scared of anybody. And Lomachenko's been around for a long time. He's an old dog. You know, Teofimo Lopez, he's young, he's hungry, he's crafty. he thinks he can get it done. And you're going against the old warrior who's proven that he's a guy that is hard to hit. He has angles, and he still has some fire left in his belly. So I think it's great. I think it's going to make for great boxing. Either one guy, I mean, only one person can win. So one guy stay on the throne, the other guy knocks him off. But the fact that a young guy wants to jump up in there and go, we don't want to wait. In fact, they both were talking about people had mentioned maybe since they weighed their weight, they were supposed to fight in May, but they were talking about tune-up fights, and both of them said, nah, there's no need for tune-up. We know what we want to do. Let's go. I love that. I was just going to say that the one thing we need to look at, though, is the last fight that Lomachenko had was with Luke Campbell. And Luke Campbell really gave him all he wanted for a while before he kind of wore him down. So we don't know what Lomachenko is going to show up. But I like the fire of this young guy, Lopez. Lopez is a busy customer. And he's going to bring it. So I think it should be a good fight.
When I saw this, and I mentioned to you earlier, I wanted to kind of talk about it. Is I kind of saw this as I remember when Floyd Mayweather fought Canelo Alvarez, and a lot of people were saying that Canelo wasn't ready for Floyd, and he was stepping to him too early. But he wanted the fight. He was hungry and he wanted it. Felt that he can beat him. And Floyd just made him look ordinary and slow. And so that was a dent in his record. I kind of looked at this fight as the same way. You got Lomachenko, which is one of my favorite fighters out there. And this young cat who is hungry, he wants to challenge. He's not ducking anybody. I commend him for it. But do you think it's too early for him? Don't you think, to me, I think he needs a little bit more seasoning before he steps up to that level of Lomachenko.
Yeah, you can say that, but I'm not mad at it. He said he won it. You know, we're only two punches away from anything changing. Boxing is that quick. So it's not like I'm serious. It's not like he's a rookie. And Lomachenko is a heavy task, but sometimes you got to dive in the water, man. And if he's as great as he is, then you got to go after the guy. You want to be the guy, you got to go after the guy. I do like your comparison of Canelo and Floyd, but the only thing there was, I think there was clearly that Floyd was that much more superior than anybody because of the way he was fought. I think Lomachenko has been very good for years, but I think that he's shown some wear and tear. I think the only time you can really say Floyd showed wear and tear is when he got rocked a little bit by Shane Mosley. But he found his way back. He fought some crazy fights against Marcus Madonna. And then, of course, he fought Cotto's fight toe-to-toe. But other than that, he was still known, even coming out of it. He was the guy anytime he wants to turn on, he can. And I think that Canelo, though, what Canelo did was instead of complaining about it, and he wanted a rematch, but he waited down the line, what he really looked at was he learned how to become a champion by watching Floyd. And I think that's what he took from that. Even from the standpoint of so-called picking and choosing the fights he wanted, he learned the business how he watched. He emulated what Floyd did. Because Oscar De La Hoya is really not probably a major fan of Floyd's, but he showed him how it really showed Canelo how to be a true champion. And that's one thing Floyd was good at. He was a good promoter. He knew how to run business, and his folks did that for him well. So that's one of the things, too. But with Lopez, hey, he's taking a shot, man. If he loses, so what? But what if he wins? If he wins, he's the man. If he loses, all right, no problem. I fought the best. Came up short. Keep on moving. He's still young. He has nothing to lose. Everything is on Lomachenko.
Yeah. One of the reasons why I love to watch Lomachenko fight is because his footwork and his positioning is something that people don't really take into account when you see him. It's almost like it's picture perfect, the way he positions, the way he uses angles, the way, you know, his footwork and how he's able to set fighters up, and his, you know, he's very mobile in the ring and setting that up. And it's just really, it's like watching the art of boxing. And you can say that about a number of boxers, very few, but it just seems like he really took to heart the old school and how to position. He doesn't have to be the strongest, don't have to be the fastest, but time and distance is a big part of fighting. And the way he just uses positions and angles is just kind of like he can teach a master class on that and how to help fighters become better at that craft. But it should be an interesting fight, and hopefully it happens in September. He had a UFC fight last week, and the UFC seems to be going strong with Overeem and Harris. A lot of people were rooting for Harris, but Overeem was a little bit too much for him in this fight. What are your thoughts about this particular fight?
Yeah, Harris tried. I mean, you got to give him a lot of play for that, but my Overeem is old school, man. You know, he's been to some battles. And he got rocked early, but he found his way. And I think that's a lot of people sleep on that. He's a warrior. He really is a warrior. You kind of go, oh, man, Harris is still kind of young in the game from the standpoint of understanding what was going on. But you could just tell that Overeem was like, look, man, you got to do better than that.
Yeah.
You know, you're like, well, Harris dropped Overeem in the first round. And you're like, oh, man, he's in trouble. And all
right.
of a sudden, Overeem's like, yeah, man, this is a long, it's not one round fight. and that's the thing that's really tough. Harris took it hard because, you know, he was, you know, he thought he was ready, and normally he was. But when you're fighting a guy like that that's been through the ringer, you know, he's like, he's supposed to, I think he was going to be 40 years old, right? And when you've been through some tough battles, you know, it's hard for a younger guy to come in there and try to take you down. He was right on point. But it's like when you fought George Foreman, when he made that second comeback. You thought you had him. Here comes George.
Yeah, I remember that. Here comes George. But to me, I thought Walt Harris, if something he could take from this is that he got to improve his ground game because he was getting pounded. Once he got to the floor, it was just pretty much over. That experience of Overeem just took over. And just the shots to the head. I mean, it's like he couldn't block them or he didn't know how to block them while they were on the ground. And usually what I notice what a lot of MMA fighters do is that they, to get that ground game, they go and learn jiu-jitsu and learn some very valuable techniques that really benefits them in the in MMA. But I just saw that as a big weakness. You know, he got the power and everything, but that ground game seemed to be missing from his game, and it was really exploited in this particular fight.
Yeah, I mean, and that's how it was. But then, like you said, Overeem is you know, he's 46-18. And he won three of his last four fights. And Harris is kind of new to the game, you know, as far as opportunities. And this should help him down the line. He stunned a very, very good fighter. And this is part of learning. This is how you go up the ranks. I mean, we talked about that, about boxing a few minutes ago, that you gotta test yourself and see where you're at sometimes. You know, a lot of people still say the same thing that when Floyd fought Jose Castillo, right? Luis Castillo, mm-hmm. He lost the first. But you gotta put it out there. And Overeem caught him. And that's part of deep waters. It's like the big time.
Actually, they're showing that fight with Mayweather and Castillo 1 right now, and I'm checking it out. Let's take a break, and let's talk about some of the NFL players who are finding themselves in hot water in the offseason. This is the Go Squad Sports Radio podcast.
Well, all right, you squares, time you smoke. Fire up this funk and let's have a toast. It'll make you dance with some of everything. Everybody get high.
Go Squad Sports podcast right here on Blog Talk Radio. If you want to check out more sports and see our radio faces on video, check out our YouTube channel, The Goon Squad, and our First 40 Sports Show. We do it every week and we post it up on YouTube. Watch it, like it, share it, and give us comments. We love to hear your comments, whether you like us or not. Just comment. Let's talk about some NFL news. It just seems like during this quarantine and lockdown and the offseason in the NFL, players still can't stay out of trouble. And I know you mentioned some of the Giants players, and I want to get your views on this because it just seems very, very shady to be sitting at a house just playing PlayStation and then finding yourself getting in trouble, losing two players, losing $35,000 each, and then coming back trying to play O.J. Simpson and you want your daddy's records back kind of deal, stealing Rolexes and stuff. So what's your thoughts on this, bro?
Well, it's really sad because you said you made it. This is where you want to be. You want to play in the league, and then all of a sudden, you lose some money or you're playing whatever with some folks, and then you want to kind of become a gangster. You know, I don't understand that. You have DeAndre Baker facing 8 counts and Dunbar facing 4 counts. And it's like the Giants told Baker, don't even show up to the facility. Don't even come to team meetings because we don't know what the hell is going on. But you put yourself in a position with over some money trying to be a gangster, whatever happened, and you should have not been in that position anyway. Now you're facing this, and when it's all cleared up, or if it is, you don't know if you're not going to be fine. You don't know if your team is even going to try to cut you or let you go. But there's a lot of stuff there, you know. So I think that's something that they should be careful about, especially now. You don't know what's going on with the league. Why would you play around like this? He's supposed to be social distancing. You know what I'm saying? So I don't get that. Hey, you stay just, as Maxine Waters said, stay your ass at home, black people.
Auntie Maxine, she said it.
That's right.
I said yes ma'am.
They didn't stay their asses home, so they facing charge. She's facing charge. Sometimes you gotta listen to the older people. But I don't trying to be a gangster or whatever they trying to do. And now you say, he say, she say, and you caught up in the situation. All your business is out there. Now we're going to find out whether or not it's true. But then again, if it's not, then a team has the right to say, hey, you're detrimental. You're a detriment to our team, and we can't have you in the locker room. You're a cancer. So they put themselves in a very bad situation that was going to be hard to see how that comes out.
Yeah, it is. I remember Chris Rock saying years ago, they were asking him about when he was married at the time, asking him, you know, how you stay out of trouble, you know, with, you know, your celebrity and women throwing themselves at you. And he said, I go home. You can't get in trouble at home. So he needed to stay home, man. What are you doing at a card game? What are you doing, you know? I mean, I've got, since the quarantine, I've got a lot of invites from some of my guys. We said, hey, man, let's get together. You know, we'll social distance, have some drinks, come over to the crib, play PlayStation, this, that, the other, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, nah, bro, I'm good. I'm good. And it's not that I don't like them because, I don't know what can happen if I'm out there, who's in contact with who. And so I've chose to isolate myself. Even my daughter, who at a few occasions, hey, I'm coming by, like, nah, you can't do that right now. I'm really trying to stay healthy. I don't know if I have it. You know, just playing it cool and playing it safe. Sometimes, you know, you do, it, people take risks. But I think it goes with that mentality that I'm at a certain status and I'm at a certain level of my life where I'm untouchable, and then you come crashing down to earth. And no matter how much money you have, how much fame you have, this too can happen to you, being in the wrong place at the wrong time and not being really kind of thoughtful about, listen, I'm of a status where if something goes down, nobody else, the thing that people don't realize, we don't know anybody else who was at this house but them. So if you're a celebrity or a athlete and you make a lot of money, please know this. When you're in the wrong place at the wrong time, they're not going to put the other people's name there on blast and what they're going through. They're going to put your name up there and you make the news. And now everybody knows. I have no clue who else was involved with this. I don't know whose house it was. They never gave out the names to the stuff. They only gave out the names to the people who are high profile. So that should be a lesson to other folks saying, hey, I'm high profile. If I want to move in certain ways, I got to really be careful of who I'm hanging out with and where I'm doing it, because if I get caught, then it's just on me. I'm the one that gets put out on Front Street. And I don't think a lot of these guys really realize that. And maybe because they get away with it on the lower levels in high school and college and think, hey, this is just another level where I could just up my game and do the same thing I was doing before, and it doesn't work. I know Black Thought talk about, you know, if you're hood, you get money, it doesn't change that you're hood. And that some of the maybe bad behaviors that you were exhibiting before just gets accentuated by the money that you make. I kind of believe that too. But it's like, you know, when do people learn about, okay, I can't move in certain ways because of my high profile? I have a good friend who lives on the East Coast who I know works for high profile people. He's done a lot of work for high profile people. He's always careful about what he does in public, because if that comes out, then it affects the other people that he works for, or has done work for, or is in close relationships with. So he is very careful about that. At one time he thought about running for political office, but said, you know what, that's not my thing. I will help people with my expertise in doing so. But he realizes that he's connected with folks that if he gets in trouble, it goes right up the chain and it affects somebody else. So not only is it affecting you, the guys that get in trouble in the NFL, NBA, or whatever league, it affects your family. Now your family got to answer questions to this. It affects everybody around you. And I don't think sometimes we think about this, because I know my grandmother and a lot of other people in my family says this. When you go out there, you represent us. You represent us. So represent us well. You come in here with some crazy stuff, it's going to look bad on our family, just not you. Any final thoughts on this, man, before we go into questions?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. But I don't know. I mean, it's still a choice. And granted, I know it was mentioned earlier about, you know, you can't take the hood out of yeah. I mean, but you still make choices. You still make choices. How you want to live your life. Yeah, that's how you want to roll, and that's what you're going to get. And sooner or later, like you said before, the NFL, they make choices as to who they want in their league. We said that earlier. And if you don't want to be a part, they can always find somebody else that wants it. They may not be as good as you are, but they definitely will be suitable to at least hold your spot. So, it's really sad and it's really crazy for them to do that, but you know, they kind of put themselves in position. So now we'll see what the end result is going to turn out to be.
Yeah, and I think also, Ice, is that it makes us folks of color look bad. It makes us look bad. Like somebody sitting somewhere going, see what I mean about them? You know, because one of the things I know my mother always said, like, listen, don't embarrass me while we're out there. And she wasn't just talking about herself as being a mother. She was talking about herself being a black woman, having kids. And I don't want this. I don't want people to say that, oh, you can't manage your kids or these kids are this way or that way. Don't embarrass me while I'm out here. And we got that very clearly on what that meant. Question this week, man.
Yeah, my question is, there's a lot going on. The baseball does come back. Like I said, there'll be no high fives, no spitting. Players are not playing.
No spitting?
Huh?
Grabbing crotches?
Yeah. Huh?
No grabbing crotches?
No. You just have
adjusting
to be away.
Yourself? No?
Yeah, you got to be away from people. So, but all these rules in place, do you think the baseball players are going to be able to deal with all that and not be able to go stir crazy and see where they be able to make these changes? Did they have this league going on for half a season?
Nope, I don't think so. I think that I think this is very dangerous territory because baseball may be able to do it to a certain degree, but when I look at other sports like basketball, football, no, there's no way you can avoid it. It's a contact sport. Baseball is not more of a contact sport, but you're gonna get excited. You're gonna you know slip up and do certain things. And hopefully folks won't contract anything and then spread it doing that. But, you know, there was like I saw the no spitting, no high five and all that other stuff. When you get caught up in the moment, you lose it sometimes. So it may be some of the Oakland A's kind of thing back in the Bash Brothers who they smash elbows together. Maybe some of them. But I don't think they'll be able to avoid certain contact, to be perfectly honest. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think that they're so used to doing certain things that they're going to try to do it, but I think it's going to be hard for a few guys. So the one good thing about it is they said they're going to test them regularly, and then guys that actually test positive are quarantined. So it should be interesting to see how they roll.
Yeah, I got one question, man. Why you let Black Thor win with the Mike Tyson debate we were having on the first one?
Did you really answer that question?
I was looking forward to a fight. I really was.
Well, sorry to disagree. All I can tell you is, I said, you know what? I got all emotional, was let into my feelings. I was like, hell. If Mike Tyson want to go out there and get his brain scrambled, who am I to stand in the way? But I did let him know, though, that I still thought it was atrocious that everybody's excited about it. But then, I mean, granted, you say Mike Tyson's a show and he is a draw. I get that. But these are two, if it is Holyfield, two 50-year-olds. Mike Tyson has been in the ring for 15 years. And Holyfield, I think he was back in the ring 2011. So, I mean, and then the other part, too, is I don't see how, and I might be wrong about this, But everybody's talking about it might be an exhibition. Mike Tyson doesn't know about the exhibition.
No, he don't know. That's not in his vocabulary.
That's what I'm trying to say. I mean, so when I heard that was going to be a 36 round little exhibition.
Six rounds? Nah, nah.
Yeah, 3 round exhibition. Terry, are you out your damn mind?
He ain't no boxer. He's a killer.
Yeah, I'm saying. I mean, I don't see the way that man was hitting them mitts, and he said, well, that's the drive. That's to kind of get you roped in. Okay, you got me roped in, but you can't tell me he can fake that. That man, he don't know but one speed. He don't know but one speed. You know, like Richard Pryor said when he's in Ali trying to go in there and do a little shadow boxing with him. He's like, man, I don't want that motherfucker to have no Joe Frazier flashback. Boop, 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 boop. Damn, champ. It's me.
I'm going to tell you a story. We both went to the same university, and I went to, I haven't been in a long time, but I went to an alumni meeting. And some of the, I would call them old heads. I mean, old heads like in the 70s and 80s. There were these two older women who were our elders who were in that meeting. And they must have had some beef back at school because something was said and the beef was on. And you could see these women sitting across from each other and veins coming out their neck. And us trying to break them up like, y'all don't do this. They're getting up trying to fight. And that's how I look at this whole situation. I don't want to see no guys old for their fighting life sitting there trying to recapture some things that they lost years ago. It's just not fun for me. It wasn't fun for me to watch Roy Jones and Trinidad after they way past their prime trying to fight. It doesn't excite me anymore. It didn't excite me to watch George Foreman. It was a gimmick at first. It wasn't fun to watch Bernard Hopkins get knocked through the ropes by a younger opponent. So I think sometimes it's just that, you know, when do we learn that, okay, once we're past our prime, once we get out of the sport, let's stay away from the sport, maybe teach others, maybe train others, but let's just stay away from it. And maybe it's just so addicting to have the adulation that they just throw caution to the wind and say, I think I can do it, until you get in the ring and get exposed and say, you know what, this was probably a bad idea. We got two more minutes left. If you want to respond to that, go ahead, man.
I just remember Tyson's last four fights. He lost three of his last four fights. And I don't know if he's on medication ever. But I saw the way he couldn't react. And my question is, he on medication now? But to say that it's going to be like an exhibition and he's going to fight three to six rounds, like for charity too? I don't think it's going to be for no charity. I just don't see the man having more than one speed. You know, he came in as a killer, as you mentioned. That's what he was taught, and I think that's all he knows. I mean, I think that and when he hit those mitts with that trainer, it was like, I mean, trainer might have been playing it up, but I think the trainer's like, oh, my God. I just don't want to have a flashback. I'm not Buster.
Oh, man. All right, that's going to do it for our show this week. Make sure you check out this show as well as other shows on Chocolate 108.1 WYDL. And check out our YouTube channel, the First 40 Goon Squad Sports Radio show. We will talk to you next week. Take care.
Than quicksand, he's taller than a tree. What you need is some real loving. Instead of your ass food. I got the butter for your muffin. Just need a kiss to the room.